One of the most awful villains James Bond ever faced was Auric Goldfinger. Fascinated by the precious metal, he would paint the skin of his victims with gold to eliminate them. Talk about some torture. We don't know for sure whether Daniel Brush ever saw the movie. But the year Goldfinger was released in 007's hometown, gold made a smashing entrance into the young boy's life indeed. And it probably got under his skin, too. From museums to exhibit halls, one cannot stop marveling at the artist's work. It's as if he had a golden touch. You're listening to Voice of Jewels, a podcast from L'École School of Jewelry Arts, supported by Van Cleef & Arpels, unveiling the stories and secrets behind history's most fascinating jewels. Daniel Brush is a painter and a sculptor. The finesse and creativity with which he crafts gold, steel, and aluminum is comparable to that of Fabergé. He's also a secretive man. Throughout his life, he shied away from crowds and fame, and he preferred working under his workshop's spotlights to being in the limelight. Driven by his relentless creativity, he can work with gold as if he were an alchemist, and can improvise with as much spontaneous creativity as a jazz musician in a jamming session. The Second Dome is one of his most iconic creations from his earlier days as a goldsmith. This small gold dome is a childhood dream come true. It's the story of Daniel's life, Brush's personal saga. His wife of several decades, Olivia Brush, also an artist, shares the secrets behind the story.
The Second Dome took over a six-year period from 83 to 89. And it's constructed of pure gold, 22-karat gold, steel. It's about 3 inches by 3 inches by 3 inches. The piece has a granulated dome, and it's inlet into a steel cylindrical bottom. And it serves no function. It is in and of itself. It is just there.
The story of how the dome came to be goes back to Daniel Brush's childhood. It might go even further back in time. London, 1960. Daniel has just turned 13. His mom's gift to him is a trip across Europe. France, Italy, Germany, England. The teenage boy discovers the world and is introduced to art. One April morning, as he is walking down the halls of the Victoria and Albert Museum, he feels particularly drawn to a showcase. A gold bowl sits inside. It's an ancient masterpiece. A 2,500-year-old Etruscan bowl, barely the size of his fist. The object shines a supernatural light and seems to give off a magical energy. Daniel gets closer, walks around it. He senses the tiny bowl has something to tell him.
And what he was struck by it was its surface is done in a very, very intricate pattern called Povascolo granulation, which he didn't know at the time. He knew nothing about what it was. It was just he was standing in front of it, and it struck him with such power. Why, I can't tell you.
Gold granulation technique dates back to ancient times. It's about heating the metal into barely visible tiny grains. Those granules are then fused onto the gold surface with no added material. The result obtained is unlike any other. It's also a cryptic art, almost magical, whose secret has been lost. Young Daniel is immediately awestruck. He swears to himself he will make something as stunningly impressive one day. And why not rediscover this long-lost art? Unknowingly, this marked the beginning of a quest that was to last a lifetime. He seemed to forget about it for a few years. Daniel enrolled in an art school and became a painter. His first true exposure to gold happened sometime later, when, out of love for his fiancée Olivia, he set out to create an engagement ring for her. In his workshop, he's heating up an ounce of pure gold. He watches the matter turn from a solid to a liquid state. He sees how gold changes colors. Liquid light, soluble fire, purple light. This is magic. A moment of true epiphany for him. He'll work hand in hand with gold, and will not stop working and shaping it with his true flair for improvisation.
For Daniel, he always felt that if he had a preconceived notion, it wouldn't be so exciting, so emotional for him. For him, it needed to happen right then and there. And where somebody might say, well, I could make a mistake or it could go wrong, he would say, or the best thing was you'd make a mistake and then it would go right. And it would be something totally different than you might have thought of ahead of time. And that's how he always worked in everything that he did.
In order to hone his craft, Daniel Brush travels around the world. On the streets of Florence, during the golden hour, he sees the gold shimmer off the building's domes. In Galla Placidia's mausoleum in Ravenna, he watches carefully the twinkling of the mosaic's small gold squares. He's already starting to visualize a masterpiece. He travels to Russia, visits workshops in Mumbai. Admitted into a circle of Parisian goldsmiths, he witnesses the handing down of craftsmen's traditions. Daniel perfects his own personal techniques from learning as well as rejecting what he is taught.
He never cast anything. He hated cast metal. He hated cast gold. And the reason he hated it was because it has a very porous surface when it's cast. It doesn't have the ability to emanate light and that's what Daniel was always after, this kind of bringing out this innate quality in gold. And if it were cast, you cannot achieve that in the same way. So Daniel did everything by hand.
In the early 80s, Daniel Brush and his wife lived in an old refurbished factory turned into a loft apartment. This space is as much a home as it is a workshop to them. An old Japanese mask, a collection of old Gyoshe turning machines, a watch collection, and dozens of painted canvases. Of his own accord, Daniel has decided to take a break from his teaching career so he can hone his painting skills. But he's also spending more and more time working with gold. As he does every morning for hours, Daniel is sweeping the floors. This form of meditative contemplation is part of his daily work ritual. For several months, he has elaborated a project to go on a quest to investigate the Etruscan heritage. Daniel works his nights away. These are painstaking, yet full of passion. The dome looks like a small box whose uselessness is conspicuous. It has a steel body and a solid gold lid. The object was polished and sanded down to perfection by hand. The lid's perfect roundness brings to mind the onion dome of a temple or of a church. The immaculate surface of the dome is meant to be covered with 70,000 granules of gold. This is the technique that has never ceased to capture Daniel's imagination since he came across the Etruscan bowl in London. Nobody ever really taught him about this luminescent granulation technique, but he has honed it to unmatched perfection in the privacy of his workshop.
There's a lot of people now that kind of study it in school and do it. And yes, you can learn how to do it, but it doesn't always look the way in his mind it should look. It's either, literally, you can see, it looks kind of like melted into the surface. It looks kind of thick and heavy. It doesn't look effortless. That's obviously what he wanted to achieve, because that's what he saw, this effortlessness in this particular bowl all those years ago. And that's what he kept in his mind.
When heated to a certain temperature, gold breaks down into infinitely small, barely visible, almost microscopic granules of a diameter of less than a quarter of a millimeter. However, the tens of thousands of granules Daniel has managed to produce are all of exactly the same diameter. Nobody before him has ever managed to achieve such regularity. With his surgical eyeglasses on, a two-haired brush, and a bit of diluted glue, Daniel applies 72,000 granules of light onto the polished dome, one by one. A job fit for a Buddhist monk. At this stage, the granules are merely laid out onto the surface of the dome. Then a charcoal brazier and a foot-powered bellow need to be used. Now the right fusion temperature needs to be reached so that the granules may adhere to the structure without disintegrating. Hold it in a split second too long, and everything will vanish. Pull it out a split second too early, and it will all collapse. 4 years of relentless research have severely put Daniel's patience to the test. For 2 years, the artist won't touch the second dome, as he'd rather dedicate himself to his painting. He doesn't feel brave enough to weld his gold granules onto the dome and run the risk of seeing one too many or one too few seconds ruin 4 years' worth of work. What fascinates him about the Etruscan bowl will eventually stay out of his reach. Daniel pictures a gathering of young women who laugh as they lay out these tiny magical granules of pure light onto the surface of the bowl. This is his idea of the effortless nature of Etruscan art. An absence of art, so to speak. It's almost as if this had all been crafted unintentionally. He had worked so hard in order to achieve this effortless quality. He seemed unable to grasp it until an unexpected miracle occurred 2 years later.
I said to him, you know, one morning, I said, well, why don't you try it now? And in a really casual way.
Daniel comes out of the workshop. He sits the dome on the large table. Nothing has changed. He lights up the charcoal, turns on the bellow, and exposes the small 72,000 gold granule-covered dome to the heat of the flame. This is the moment of truth he has been waiting for so long. This split second, neither too long nor too short, is enough to help him perfect his work and uncover the secret of the Etruscans. Daniel is looking tense. He's counting the seconds. He turns up the heat a little, neither too long nor too short, just the right time. He suddenly puts out the flame. His fear has almost vanished.
And it worked. Which was both a combination of relief and, you know, exhilaration, right? And the culmination of all of it. I mean, you know, think about it. It was that many years in culmination. So, yeah.
Daniel rotates the dome to the sunlight. He shows it to his wife. She's astonished. Each gold granule is in its place and has fused with the dome. The drops of gold have been paved into circular rows, which seem to cause the object to vibrate on its own. How simple and obvious. Completed to perfection. It looks like a miniature temple in pointillistic style. Like an object of worship whose unclear ritual has managed to freeze time. 10 years later, in 1998, Daniel Brush's dome is put on display at the Smithsonian, among a dozen other creations of his. This prodigy leaves everyone in disbelief. In New York City and in Paris, at L'École School of Jewelry Arts, the same miracle happens. It is as if the secret of the Etruscan bowl has traveled across the centuries to be brought back to life into this tiny dome that has visitors under its spell.
I mean, you know, most art, when we look at it today, either has a very specific social message or it speaks to contemporary times. And I think this piece is completely timeless. It doesn't matter, or you don't know from whence it came. It just is.
Voice of Jewels, a podcast from L'École School of Jewelry Arts, supported by Van Cleef & Arpels. With Olivia Brush, artist, wife, life and work partner for more than 50 years. Written by Martin Kenéon and Aram Kebadjian. Performed by Eduardo Ballerini and produced by Bababab.